This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. While the rich get richer here at home, the efficacy of our democracy in terms of providing equality and access to all citizens has shown to be greatly in doubt. Sure, our rhetoric on the subjects of freedom and liberty is lofty, but we have a serious double standard when other nations try to implement their own versions of democracy, especially in our own backyard. Since Hugo Chavez became president of Venezuela, he has surely been a thorn in the side of the American diplomats who are used to having South American leaders as loyal and obedient partners. It's not only that Hugo Chavez has the audacity to stand up to American interests that has earned him our political scorn. It's the oil. As a petrol-rich state, Venezuela has the means to influence global foreign policy and create allegiances that greatly vex their supposed American masters. So what is Chavez doing that is so infuriating us? Well, unlike most autocratic regimes we keep in power, Chavez is channeling much of the country's oil wealth into its citizens and the betterment of their lives. By providing health care and increasing the literacy rate of the poor population, Venezuela is taking sizable steps towards an improved future and a greater role on the world stage. Lisa Sullivan Rodriguez has firsthand knowledge of the conditions on the ground both before and after Chavez. And needless to say, in her more than 20 years in South America, she has never seen such changes for the better. Eleanor Ostrinsky has our interview.
Tell me about how you joined Maryknoll.
As a college student, I went to a Quaker college and went on a program to Mexico to learn Spanish, and which I did very quickly because I just really fell in love with the people of Mexico, the people of Latin America. And I got on a Greyhound bus just to go home to say, I'm going back. I need to find out more. And this was in 1977 when there was a lot of turmoil in Latin America, especially Central America. I came back and taught English and then read about a sister, a Mercy nun who was working in a little village in Guatemala, and just felt called to go join her. And it was when there was no phones really in these areas, so I just got in a bus and to this tiny village arrived. And it was a moment that turned my life around, living in this little village in Guatemala in 77, in the midst of civil war in this country, when people who were involved in the church and speaking out against the massacres they were seeing, they themselves began to disappear. And so I felt a call within myself to understand the situation better. It was a time when Romero was newly ordained a bishop, and he would speak from a radio in our little chapel. That was the only way we would have mass. So that really was my call to Latin America to begin with, to understand more, and a call to respond to the tremendous faith of these people. So I, in one way or another, stayed in Latin America doing different things. And then I married. My husband's from Venezuela. And we really wanted the opportunity to commit ourselves more fully to working with the poor. And that's when we heard about the Maryknoll Lay Mission Program. We had known about the priests and the sisters. And when we heard about this, we joined with our one son who was one, and he's now 21. So
you've been doing this for 20 years.
20 years with Maryknoll. Yep, 20 years.
And what's it like in Venezuela on a political front?
Well, that's a very big question. It's been a very interesting time. I've been in Latin America for 27 years, but I would say without a doubt, the most interesting political time has been the past 5 years in Venezuela. I've seen in my time in Latin America so many efforts to bring about change that's so deeply needed. You know, it's a continent which for so long the wealth has been concentrated in few hands and the vast majority are poor and, you know, cannot access the wealth of their nations and basic services, you know. So what's happened in Venezuela is what I would see as a real effort through democracy to drastically, dramatically change that concentration of wealth. And so that's been an exciting time of tremendous amount of elections starting in 1998. There have been about 7 elections, all of which have had large participation. The people drafted and wrote a new constitution. I saw people in my neighborhood participate in that. And that new constitution, for the first time, celebrated a lot of things of women's rights, the environment, more participation of communities in their government. People feel so strongly, as a matter of fact, about their constitution. It was a beautiful event that took place a couple years ago in which they decided, it was shortly after a coup had occurred, and a coup turned around quickly in a space of 2 days. And they wanted to celebrate the fact that they would not let go of their constitution, and they organized what they called La Procesión de la Constitución, Procession of the Constitution, and made a huge 8-foot constitution and planned this event for a month and processed it where there were different stops, kind of like a way of the cross, in which different groups did readings, like a women's group would do a reading of some of the new articles regarding women, and a children's group regarding the rights of children, and cultural groups regarding new rights to the cultural rights of the people. So that to me really struck a chord of the desire of the Venezuelan people to bring about change through their votes, through democracy, through peaceful ways. And this is so important in a country that has Colombia on the major part of its border, where a country that's been at war for so many years. So I feel a tremendous sense of hope in the people and in their attempts to bring about major change. And it's not easy. There's been tremendous confrontation. There's been, a lot of opposition to these attempted changes. That's why there was a coup in 2002. But that coup was turned around. And just recently there were elections in which there was an affirmation of the current government. And even more recently, local governor and mayor elections in which this whole new political project swept 90% of the country. So it's a time of hope, I would say, from the perspective of the poor. From the perspective of the poor in Venezuela, it's a tremendous time of hope.
And from the perspective of everybody else?
Well, the poor tend to be the majority, which are about 60%. There are interests who are feeling, I would say, threatened. For example, the oil company. Oil is what is the major source of Venezuela's income. So certainly those who benefited from some of these huge oil profits and the shakedown from that, different political favoritism are not too happy with what's happening.
This is Voices of Our World. If you're just joining us, we are talking with Lisa Sullivan Rodriguez about the current events in Venezuela and the steps taken by the Chavez government to empower the poor, tax the rich, and redistribute wealth in Venezuela. Tactics that may have made him a hero to some and a villain to others. So, why is it that America is so wary of a democratically elected populist with the intentions of actually putting power back into the hands of the people? Could it be that in our version of democracy, the poor and sick are often forgotten? Perhaps it is because we prefer to impose our version of democracy onto our allies instead of having them learn the true meaning for themselves. We continue our interview with Lisa Sullivan Rodriguez on Voices of Our World.
If we wanted to tell our audience that may or may not know very much about Venezuela, can you give us an example of what it means for those people who have benefited mm-hmm. Over a long period of time from the natural wealth of Venezuela? And what does it mean to be one of those people who has not benefited mm-hmm. in any mm-hmm. way?
Sure. Again, that is the image of Venezuela. In certain ways, it's correct. It is one of the largest oil producers. It's either between the fourth and the fifth, depends on kind of how it's rated. But it's the U.S.'s largest close supply of oil. So it's strategically of tremendous, tremendous importance to the United States. It has been an oil nation since the 30s. But again, these profits, initially, the U.S. was involved in exploration. There were private companies. As I said, although this oil was nationalized, that wealth never really reached the benefit of the citizens, the great majority of Venezuelan citizens. You had a country where really schools were so overcrowded. They looked really like chicken coops. And even to get into one of the three shifts, mothers would get up at, 2 in the morning to get in line to register their children. So these are basic services a country, should have. Likewise, health care. No services in the poor communities. So when you would look at the wealth that Venezuela would have on paper and then compare it to the quality of life of its citizens, there was something, shockingly wrong going on. And a political system had been created around that to kind of maintain a system in which much of this wealth really never was reached, not only to directly to the hands of people, but to the services that citizens of any country would need. So these people's lives, not only their direct needs such as healthcare or schooling, the schools have been totally revamped. The budgets, teacher salaries have increased threefold. So in the quality of their life and those of their children, I've seen dramatic changes. There's still a long way to go. But even more, I sense that people are feeling like we're part of this. We're part of these changes. I could go on and on. There's the literacy programs and how that depends on local volunteers to make that operate. And there's over a million people just graduated. Now, on the other side, again, I don't really think at this point that there's been a radical shift in, let's say, now that the poor are actually wealthier, that much wealthier, they're wealthier, that much poor. It's more a sense of directing funds in the country. And so I don't think that many of the wealthy would say, look, this is actually come out of our pocket. But I think it's more of a fear. And also, in fairness to them, I mean, I think there has been a lot of really harsh rhetoric on the part of the government and of President Chavez from time to time that they may not feel included in this. And I think that's where I would put my bit of reservation in terms of what's going on. And that is, again, my desire to dialogue, which is one of the reasons we've brought in delegations. I've led several delegations in the past year. We met with labor leaders who were in opposition. We met with church leaders on both sides. So these were delegations of people from many different organizations in the U.S. who were interested, realizing there's something happening in Venezuela and wanted to have a better sense of it. So some came just to listen and to learn, and some came, a group from California came who had raised funds for the health program that the Cuban doctors, and they brought health equipment. People who have an interest in Latin America have realized that there's something interesting happening in Venezuela. And as is the case with many countries, in the U.S. press, it's really hard to kind of understand what's really happening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been great sharing. Thanks.
What do you think? Should democracy be the goal of U.S. foreign policy in South America? Email us at radio@marynoll.org or go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us. Or you can call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. Well, that's it for this week, and thanks for listening. Greg Grandin and Lisa Sullivan Rodriguez are just two of the voices of our world. I'm your host for this week's show, Eileen Bott. This show was produced by Michael R. Jones. Our website is www.voicesofourworld.org, where you can listen, learn more about today's guests and topics, answer our weekly question, or subscribe to our podcast. Please go to www.voicesofourworld.org. To learn more about Mary Knoll or try Mary Knoll magazine in English or Spanish, call 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.